Welcome to the Reformed Media Review. My name is Camden Busey. We're here with David Filson, who's teaching pastor at Christ Presbyterian Church in Nashville, Tennessee, PCA congregation there. I have a whole number of books and a journal in front of me today. We want to go through and just announce and provide an update about what these books are about, and just a notice so that you can know to look for them if you're so interested. Well, David, I want to start off here first with the recent issue of JETS, the Journal of the Evangelical Theological Society. I don't know if you subscribe to this, do you?
I do indeed.
Well, we got the new one. I got mine, I think, last week, and there's a whole bunch of good stuff in here. As an editorial by Andreas Kustenberger. But we also have this back and forth between Daniel Wallace and Stanley Porter on Granville Sharp's rule. So the Greek students and the New Testament scholars especially might be interested in that back and forth. Haven't had a chance to read that yet, but it's on my list. It looks interesting. We have an article titled, What Do These Stones Mean? The Riddle of Deuteronomy 27 by Daniel Block. And we also have Jonathan Edwards' Concept of an Original Ultimate End by Walter J. Schultz. Have you seen that one?
It looks interesting to me. My copy of this particular issue is still wrapped in its plastic bag.
Yes.
Came in. So I'm even a little further behind than you are. I've got to take it out of its bag. But that article did catch my eye.
Yeah, I wondered. You're always interested to see new scholarship on Edwards. And I haven't read that either, but again, on the list there. So for those of you who subscribe, you probably already received your copy. If you haven't, I think you can go to etsjets.org is the website, I believe, and you can subscribe. You can also find past issues of this online where the articles are in PDF format, or you can head over to your library or your closest theological library to get a copy of that, JETS, the Journal of the Evangelical Theological Society. Also, here's another book that I was excited to get. This is published by Crossway. It's titled The Psalter Reclaimed, Praying and Praising with the Psalms by Gordon Wenham. I received this book a few weeks ago, and I've been able to thumb through it. I hope to do a more substantial review in the future, possibly also an interview with Dr. Wenham if we're able. But this is a collection of a number of different studies and articles that Dr. Wenham has written on the Psalms. And he's pieced these together. Some of them have been published before, but now they're all available together as the single volume with some new contributions. One is What Are We Doing Singing the Psalms? He has a chapter called Praying the Psalms, then Reading the Psalms Canonically, and Reading the Psalms Messianically, The Ethics of the Psalms, The Imprecatory Psalms, which is a hot topic, right. Psalm 103, The Song of Steadfast Love, and then finally he finishes with The Nations in the Psalms. So a whole bunch of different themes that he expands upon in this book. And what I've had a chance to see so far has been very promising and interesting. So that's The Psalter Reclaimed, Praying and Praising with the Psalms.
Looking forward to getting into that one as well. I'll pick that up today myself.
Now we have another one that's received a lot of press. I think it's been called Required Reading by D.A. Carson. So when he says something like that, people perk up. This is a book called Saving Eutychus, How to Preach God's Word and Keep People Awake. With a nice cover of a window and a shadow of a guy falling. This is written by Gary Miller, or Millar, depending on if you're a Boston Red Sox fan or however you want to pronounce that, and a guy named Phil Campbell. It's published by Matthias Media. You may know them. They published that book, The Trellis and the Vine, a few years ago. So they do some good work. And this book, I haven't had a chance to look at it. Again, just providing an update and news that this is out in the Westminster Bookstore. WTSBooks.com has had a good deal on it. I don't know if that deal is over.
I think it's over now.
Yeah, this looks like a promising title and one that we want to follow up on and look into on Christ the Center, perhaps. Have you seen this one, David?
I don't have it. I meant to order it when it was on that good deal, and I waited too late, and I missed it, but I'm going to order it probably this week.
Yeah. Well, it happens sometimes. They usually have these 50% off deals, and you have to jump on them because they're good for about 48 hours.
You snooze, you lose.
Well, I asked somebody what they thought this book was about. I said, do you know who Eutychus is? And they said, I don't remember. I said, well, who do you think? And this person said, I don't know, something to do with Humpty Dumpty. Said, well, not exactly.
Players, they both fell.
They both fell off a wall. Yeah. But in this case, the Spirit of the Lord through Paul was able to put Eutychus back together again, I guess.
Right.
Here's one. This one might be a little bit off the beaten path, but it's a new book that came out within the year called The Vatican Diaries, a behind-the-scenes look at the power, personalities, and politics at the heart of the Catholic Church by John Thavis, T-H-A-V-I-S. It's published by Viking Press. I usually don't pick up books like this, you know, especially when they're bestsellers, you know, about the behind the scenes of the Catholic Church. But this one had received good press and good reviews from some Catholic sources that I appreciate and that I think are, you know, generally scholarly and good. And so I picked this up and started reading it. And what I've read has been very interesting. Really? And it goes behind the scenes. This guy, John Thavis, is an American, but he spent, I think, several decades, at least over 25 years, for the Catholic news service. I forget the exact title of it, but he was a reporter for the Vatican. And so he got to know the personalities, the inner workings of how the Vatican worked and how the politics of it all worked. And you end up with a whole host of just interesting anecdotes and stories about Benedict and about John Paul the second. Wow. And so there's one in particular where they're on the Pope's plane and all these reporters, and they usually are kept far from the Pope. You know, even though they're on his plane, they almost never see him. And he remarks how usually people can follow the Pope more closely and have more access to him through television than the reporters actually get who follow him around, even though these reporting, these news services pay exorbitant amounts of money to have their reporters have this direct access to the Pope. It's kind of a mirage almost. But yeah, there's this one case where they're on the Pope's plane and they're delayed, I think, due to weather, and they weren't able to get their dinner or anything. So one of the reporters starts digging around the airplane and comes up with a bunch of these bottles of liquor from I don't know, Morocco or something, some odd country, a small country, finds all these bottles of liquor in some plastic cups. And so they all start digging into it and having a few drinks, probably having too many drinks, because they haven't had dinner and there's nothing else to do and they're grounded for the time. But then the Pope's handler comes out and says, look, we have a special event. You know, we're going to let you each have, you know, about half an hour of private time with the Pope on the flight. And so he talks about how all of these reporters are drunk and they go in to sit with John Paul II and ask him questions, even though they're all can't really talk and they're slurring their speech. It's just really hilarious in one sense. I mean, not funny in another, but there's stories like that all over this book. And if you get a kick out of that sort of thing, then you can.
John Paul had to be thinking, no wonder I don't allow these guys much access to me.
Exactly. Anyway, I'll read one paragraph. I'm not giving you the whole story here, but if I just read the whole thing, it's going to be too long. So I'll just start. You'll get a sense for it yourselves. As they were brought forward one by one to sit next to the pontiff and chat briefly with him, we would see for ourselves how alert and engaged he was. Navarro apparently hadn't noticed that half the plane was tanked to the gills, and so it came to pass that John Paul sat listening as a parade of reporters staggered up and in tones ranging from maudlin to chummy, blurted out vodka-fueled ruminations on life, religion, children, and of course the papacy. The photo souvenirs were priceless. We looked as if we were the Pope's seatmates on the flight, chatting away like old friends. On closer inspection, however, my own photo told the real story. Me in animated conversation, the Pope smiling weakly as his eyes glazed over. So,
anyway. Smiling weakly.
Yeah, exactly. So that's The Vatican Diaries by John Thavis, published by Viking, which is an imprint of Penguin. And then finally, one more in front of me. This was a recommendation from a friend several months ago. I was talking to a guy who has some Dutch blood in him. There's a lot of Dutch settlements out here in the Midwest, and I'm becoming more and more familiar with, you know, that kind of history and Dutch culture. the Dutch Reformed culture. And there are a lot of people with Dutch religious history that are in OPC churches out here, you know, former CRC people, that sort of thing. And so I was curious about how all these settlements came about and what's the history of Dutch immigration. How has the Reformed Church moved through the Dutch tradition in the United States? And there were two books that came to a head. John Fickert, who's associate pastor here at Bethel OPC in Wheaton, notified me of these books, and I purchased one of them, but both of them have the same title, Netherlanders in America. So there's two books by different authors on Dutch immigration to America, and both are called Netherlanders in America. I have one in front of me here by Henry S. Lucas, and it's published by Erdmans, but I think these are both out of print, so you have to get a used copy. The one I have, you can find for $20-$25. It was first published in 1955. The edition I have is from 1989. The other one is by a guy named Van Hinte, H-I-N-T-E. Those run for $100 to $200, so I don't have one of those. But they go over Dutch immigration to the United States. It's really fascinating. They touch on preliminary considerations, different governmental and sociological factors going on in the Netherlands that gave rise to revolution. The author here, Lucas, speaks about causes and the character of the new immigration. The secession of 1834. They speak a bit about the Free Church. But then they talk about this guy named Van Ralty, who sets sail and comes to found Holland, Michigan, I believe, which is, of course, is a very well-known Dutch settlement. I mean, you can go there and see all the windmills and buy wood shoes and all that kind of fun stuff. They have a tulip festival every year. But he goes through, it's more or less, almost a reference volume. You're probably not going to read it directly through. That's what John Fickert said, and then I agree with him having looked at it. But if you're interested in Dutch immigration, and if you live in places like Pella, Iowa, or even, you know, places like places in Wisconsin where there have been Dutch settlements, or you're just curious about how all these Dutch immigrants came to live in the United States and what effect they had on religion and socioeconomic factors, that sort of thing, then this is a book for you. Netherlanders in America, Henry S. Lucas, published by Erdmans. You can find that going to places like bookfinder.com and doing a search, and it'll usually show you either ABE Books or Amazon. You usually find copies there, so. Anyway, big fat book and an interesting read there. So those are all the books I have in front of me for the day. A whole wide range of things, but we thought we'd like to mention those and just provide an opportunity for the listeners to decide whether or not they want to go further. Do you have anything else, David?
No, just that I need to mark my list. I think there are these three books there that I need to put on my wish list.
That's the problem. I look around my office here. I've got piles and piles of books, and you always, in the moment, you're saying, I got to read this. I want to get this book, and you get it, and next thing you know, it just sits on the shelf until a year later. But then, you know, you finally get to it, and you really appreciate it. So anyway, it's fun.
You know how many books we actually need? Yeah. Just one more. Always just one more.
I think that's a good place to end. We want to encourage people to get a hold of us. If you have any more suggestions, if there are any books that you'd like for us to treat, perhaps review, then get a hold of us at mail@reformedforum.org. This has been the Reformed Media Review. Thanks for listening.